Audio Now.
Hello Holly, the podcast about interior, trends, and friends.
Hi, I'm Holly Becker from the interior blog Decorate. I'm an author, a stylist, and I have my own magazine called Holly, and now my new podcast about interiors, zeitgeist, and friendship. Are you ready? Hello, I'm so happy to be here with my guest today, Peter Ferenc. He is a multidisciplinary designer. He's not only just a designer, if that's not enough, he's also a stylist, an interior architect, and a photographer. I've known Peter for many years. I'm so happy to have you here. Thank you for coming on my show.
Hello, Holly. Thanks for inviting me.
You're welcome. Yeah, so we have a lot to talk about. First, because I find your work and what you do so intriguing and very well done, but also you went to Japan recently. You've produced so many things in your line of work throughout the years. I just want to know more, and I think the audience would also be interested in learning more about you. So let's just get started. So one thing I really want to ask you about is your life in general right now, because I know recently we went out to dinner and we had a chat, and you're involved in so many things. And I just would really like to know right now, what's exciting you at the moment? Is there anything with interiors or the world or any topics or anything you just really makes you happy right now?
What excites me at the moment? It excites me that the year's coming to an end. That means usually that like designs and production shootings are coming to an end and I see results. But what excites me most is that I'm sitting here with you today.
Oh, very, very nice. Okay, so I'll give you the money later for saying that. Yeah, but I agree. Like at the end of the year, doesn't it always just feel like your shoulders just go down a bit and it's like, like, you know, can relax a bit.
Totally. Because almost every company wants to shoot at the end of the year because they need all the catalogs in the beginning of the next year because it starts with the fair in Cologne. And that's the reason why there's a lot of work. And at the same time, it's the time with the shortest days. And I'm shooting a lot at daytime. And that means that the days are very short on one hand side, but on the other hand side is that you're spending most of the day in almost like dark rooms, which is kind of different.
Yes.
I like sunshine and summer. And so I'm happy when this year is over and the days are getting longer.
Yeah, I agree. The other day when I was in my studio, we were shooting a little bit and I remember we had to finish shooting by 3 o'clock and it was dark at 4. And I remember thinking, wow, you really have to work fast right now because you have to start around, 8:39 and then you wrap up around 3 or 4. How do you usually work like that with natural light?
No, in wintertime, I start latest point at 8 in the morning and then you have to finish like 4 o'clock. But I think the working day is not shorter because you can prepare and we prepare in darkness for the next day and then everything is prepared and you're really quick with shooting, which is then the same time for shooting or working as when you're working in summer.
Yeah, that's actually a good point because they always say limitation breeds creativity. And sometimes when you're limited and you know you only have 6 hours of light versus 10 hours, you work better, you work faster, more efficient. So yeah, I can see where that would work. And when you're shooting, like because the audience may not know this, what do you do? What are you doing when you're shooting things? When you talk about photography, I know you're working with magazines and catalogs. Maybe you can tell us more about that.
Yeah, right now I'm only shooting for Schönavon. It's the magazine I'm working for a very long time.
Yeah, and I look forward every month to your columns.
Thank you.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. So Schönavon is where it all began, where I learned the discipline of styling. I think it's like 25 years ago.
Okay.
When I entered the room and I made an internship at Andreas Lichtenstein's office, and he's now vice editor and chief of Living at Home, and you both work a lot together.
Yes,
which I know.
Yeah.
That's how it all started with Schönavon. I work like bimonthly now for Schönavon and do a production. I plan with the magazine together. And then when it comes to the shooting, I have like ordered all the furnitures over weeks, and then it all comes together on one day, or we shoot, usually we shoot 2 days.
Right.
For like a 6 or 7 page story. Mm. And we built big settings, like wow. real living rooms
right.
or like bedrooms.
So you rent locations?
Yeah.
Okay.
We go mostly in daylight locations because I like the daylight structure and not to shoot too much with artificial light or mix the lights up. I like the natural light, maybe supported by some artificial light. And for that reason, we go normally in locations that have a structure with the beautiful windows or walls, or sometimes concrete. Sometimes it's an old apartment, like in Bel Etage or whatever.
Yeah,
that's nice. But it's always necessary that we have big spaces because we have so many packages with stuff to unpack, and
yeah, it's a lot. The production is a lot.
It's a lot, yeah.
Yeah, and you have assistants that help you, and people that are, yeah, fantastic. And how do you source or how do you find these locations? Because I remember speaking to you recently and you told me you found something really beautiful for a catalog you were shooting. How do you find these interesting places to shoot?
The interesting places to shoot is in the internet. I do a lot of internet research for locations, and sometimes I'm also researching in books about architecture. There I find like very outstanding houses that are good locations for shootings. And then I try to contact the owners, like mostly through the architect or directly.
Oh my gosh, whatever. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you always seem to nail it, because every time I see something produced by you, it never looks like you just use the same room in every issue. It always looks different. There's always a different look and feel. I remember one you did back in 2017. I think it was about Wabi Sabi. You were ahead of the trend, because as we know, like Wabi Sabi and Japandi and this whole trend started around the same time that you spotted it. And I remember being so impressed by that story. It was really quite beautiful. Now, some of the locations actually are your home, right? Because you have a flat in Hamburg and also in Berlin. So you use these places as well too.
Yeah, right.
Okay.
Right.
Great. And you're working also on catalogs. So in addition to Schöne Wohnen, you do the concept of production and the photography for Grüne Erde for their catalog, and also for Moore and for Luiz. That's correct?
That's right, yeah.
Wow. And so when you're working with a company like that, you must have to sit down and go through a lot of hours thinking about how you want to plan this look for them. How long does that take, really, to plan a catalog for a brand, approximately?
That's difficult to say, because we talk all the year and again and again. And we know that there are like many or different shootings within a year. For example, for Grüne Erde, they do a lot of catalogs, and I'm there like around 30 days a year in Austria to shoot there, which is a lot.
Yeah.
And then for Moore and for Luiz, it's at the end of the year, the catalog for the next year. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to say how long it takes in days, but it's always a process that I try to find a location quite early in the year to fix that all. And then the designs are coming up. It also has to develop through the year, and it's never like ready months ago. It's ready maybe the week before.
I know that feeling. It's always, there's never a shoot without stress, right?
Always something
going on,
and
or
it's
something
always
doesn't
last
show
minute.
Up. Always. How do you like to work like that? Does that drive you? Is that like a good adrenaline rush, or do you like to, would you prefer to not have that, or do you like it?
No, I like it because I like to plan a lot in advance and to be on the safe side. And that is more and more the older I get. Like, it's a natural process.
Yeah.
But the older I get, the more experience I get also. Mm-hmm. So it's things that are stressing me are not that much anymore like it was years ago. And I like the pressure of the moment, and I like always to be not over-prepared, I would use this word, because it leaves you space for improvisation.
Yeah.
And that's what I really like, and I think that is one of my strengths, to improvise.
Okay, yeah, because you're so creative and you have, I would say I've never worked with you, I've never watched you in a production, maybe someday I'll get that. I would love to do that.
Sure.
Yeah, but I just imagine you working that way because your personality is like that. Like I know I've been out with you and, you know, we start at one place and we end up at another place at the end of the night and you're just like, let's do this, let's do that. And, you know, I think that's one thing that I really find about creative people in general, but especially you, is that you like to have a plan, but then you like to go and be creative and inject your own feeling. Because it's so, I think what we do is has so much to do with mood, right?
Mm-hmm.
The feeling of the moment.
Yeah, that's right.
How
you
feel.
And I like, and I like to sit, for example, with companies and they ask me, what can we do with the next shooting or with the next fair? And I like to develop like an answer within 5 minutes. And not just saying, oh, I have to think about it. I need to go home and let's have another meeting. And then I'm prepared for this question.
Yeah.
I like to bring it out in the moment because that brings out a lot of energy and creativity. I remember when I studied the ideas you have first, like in the first moment, it's mostly
the best.
The best.
Yeah.
And you are like, that's what you're doing when you're studying. You learn like to look in from different angles and to make new designs and varieties and whatever. But I always came back to what I thought first because I liked it the most at the end. And but that's, I think it's different for everybody.
Yeah. Do you think that maybe it's different for everybody, not so much that it's really is different for everybody, but that over time you get more trust in your own intuition? So like someone maybe in their 20s, they have this first feeling, but then they doubt themselves and then they end up doing something different. Whereas someone in their 30s or 40s, they, and you know, someone in our age group, we're a lot more intuitive and in touch with ourselves. So we feel like, our first gut reaction, we know this is probably the best because we've had enough time in the industry and in our work to realize this. Do you think that's the case, possibly?
Yeah, it's something that builds up over the years, the trust in yourself. And it has to do in general with your self-esteem, like how you're raised.
Yeah, we spoke a lot about that over dinner recently. And I think that's so important to, as we spoke about, is giving children an early start with their self-esteem.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to give them a lot of stuff. You just have to give them a lot of love, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and trust and not question all the time and just give trust.
Yeah.
That's most important.
Yeah, I think that goes the whole life.
That's for the whole life then, yeah.
Yeah. When I was in your home, I saw a beautiful cocktail cabinet that you designed for Moore Mubel, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, and you also recently did a redesign of a credenza that you did for them. It used to be in dark wood, and now it's in a lighter wood. Is that correct?
Yeah.
I love that one. What's the name of it?
It's Harry. It's because it's all the same collection. It started with the cabinet, with the bar cabinet, and it's named Harry after the famous bar in Venice.
Okay.
Harry's Bar. It's a famous cocktail bar.
Okay.
And so the name is Harry, but spelled differently, like H-A-R-R-I. It was a big success, and we developed a whole range around the Harry Bar cabinet.
Yeah.
It all has like parts you will see also in the bar cabinet. So sometimes it's the structure, the frame, or sometimes it's the surface because it has like the fine lines made of wood, like stripes. And yeah, some parts of the design you find in all the Harry collection. And now it's very big. It's like it has a credenza and it's a sideboard and a dining table. And now I just photographed last week a bar chair and a dining chair also for the Harry collection.
Wow, that congratulations.
Yeah, thank you.
That's great. It must be exciting to live around things that you actually made.
Yeah, that's very exciting, yeah.
Yeah, because I know your book that you wrote, Made by Yourself, in German and in English. And I remember that book. And when I was in your home recently, when we were there to produce the first article about you in the second issue, I remembered seeing a couple of things from that book in the house. I think one was a small wood stool or a scrap wood stool that you did.
Leftovers.
Yeah. And I remember seeing those things and I thought, oh, that must give you a good feeling because I'm not a woodworker, so I can't make anything by hand. I've never tried. But when I see those things, I think that must be a nice feeling to be around your own production, you know, your own creativity.
Yeah, I think it's both.
Yeah.
So sometimes when I produced or designed things, I don't need to have them around me anymore because I saw them already and I know the process and I don't have the fresh first view on it. And it's also with work. I always like to look more at work that others have done than on my own work. I like that more.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. I noticed in your house too, one thing that I love about your decoration style is that you like to mix in some vintage pieces. Mm-hmm. On one of your Harry cabinets, you have a really nice, I think it's a papagai, a parrot lamp.
Yeah, it's like a fantasy bird.
Old-fashioned lamp, but it looks so fresh when you combine it with something so contemporary.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you do that? Why do you bring in vintage pieces? What makes you feel good about that? Or how does that make you feel to live around older items with newer items?
Yeah, I like older items when they have a twist like that lamp.
Yeah.
It's like it's kitsch on one hand side. Yeah. On the other hand side, it's very beautiful. And I like to mix it because it gives the interior and like personal style. But when not everything is new and set and done and you mix up with personal pieces you found and that maybe have also a story.
Yeah.
Like how you found it, that makes it very personal.
Yeah, let's talk about that for a minute because you were just in Japan. And I'm sure you must have brought some pieces back. Is there anything that you brought home to decorate in your home or to place on a shelf that has a real value to you from Japan?
Yeah, I brought home tea bowls.
Oh, okay.
Because I love the tea ceremony and the big bowls and the stories behind, because those ceramic artists in Japan, they have a big story and some of them are so famous and it's so incredible. Expensive to buy even new pieces of them, and it's a great culture.
Yeah, and how did you feel when you got back from Japan? What did you take away from that experience?
I mean, it
must
was
have been
like
kind of life changing.
It was kind of life changing.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, I had a lot of expectations before, and I thought we know a lot about Japan already in our culture, but I had the feeling that it's kind of really different when you're there and experience it in life. And it was completely different, but also not the way I expected it. I thought it's like being on another planet and very strange. And it was not at all that way. I felt like very normal and it wasn't like a different place, even though people live their life in a complete different way. And there are so many things that are different, especially the thing with the noise in a city.
Oh, like, yeah, you told me about that, nighttime in Tokyo.
Nighttime in Tokyo, yeah.
It's quiet.
It's kind of quiet, and there are not that many cars and no ever a siren Like sometimes, yes, for sure, because it's such a big city. But compared to cities like New York, where it's like noisy all the time sirens and cars are like
road rage. All the time.
Traffic jam. And that's different. And even the people on the streets are like very calm and nobody's screaming and no rubbish, no chewing gums on the street. It's so different. Like it's all about little details, but they are so well behaved in their like how they interact with each other. So,
yeah, you mentioned that they have really good manners. Really, that's important. I think sometimes in Western culture we lose that. I can always see that at the Weihnachtsmarkt, people pushing and no one says excuse me or Entschuldigung bitte. They just push right through. And I think sometimes in Western culture we forget we're all human and we all deserve like respect for our personal space. And if you push someone, you should always be nice and say I'm sorry, you know.
Yeah.
And I think the Japanese are just much more aware of that. Or what do you think?
Yeah, I think they have it very deep and for a long time in there. It's a part of their culture.
Yeah.
And it's learned for a long time. And for them, it's normal. And it's nice to experience because the way how they like act with design also of food, and especially food like the kaiseki tradition, how they prepare food.
Food, you told me about that in a very special way.
It's like, I mean, we know it from haute cuisine, like star cuisine.
Yeah,
here.
Michelin star.
It's a little similar.
Right.
But they have it for such a long time, and it's beautiful to see it and to experience it.
And I bet it's without the stress in the kitchen, because the Michelin star, whenever you watch these chefs in the kitchen, they're always screaming at their staff and everyone's stressed. And I always think, when you bring food that was created under such stress and pressure to a table, how did that affect the food, you know? And now if you think about the Japanese, I'm sure they're not in the kitchen screaming at each other.
No.
So it must be much more of a like tranquil experience to eat somewhere like that. And, you know, I want to talk a little bit about your paint because it reminds me a lot of this Japanese wabi-sabi style, this Nendo, this clay paint that you've co-founded, this brand. I have it now on my wall, and I thank you very much for this. It's such a nice gift, and I love it because it feels less perfect.
Mm-hmm.
It's a bit imperfect. You have a special wooden brush with bristles that you're supposed to use to apply it. What's actually in the paint? Is the paint safe? Can you tell us a little about that?
Yeah, the paint is totally safe. It's like it has an eco certificate, and it's just clay and some parts that make the clay more form that it's more easy to paint it.
Right. Yeah.
But it's all very eco-friendly, and you can like eat it or make a mask for your face. And
I should have used what was left over.
I never tried it, but I think it's good.
Next time, I'll use what's left over on my face, and I'll send you a picture, and I can say I clayed my face. What do you think?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, that's a good idea, huh? And then afterwards, I take it off, and we'll see if it worked or not. But I know when we applied it to the wall, it made a white room suddenly have warmth and a feeling of age.
Yeah.
Is that what you were going for with creating a mineral-based paint? Is that what you like about the paint? Like, why did you go with something that has a bit of a texture? It's very tactile. Why did you choose that versus just a latex paint?
Yeah, it's because it gives the room immediately a different feeling. If you have the structure, even though it's just a paint, I mean, we have the same colors also at the plaster now, which you bring on the wall with a 2 millimeter layer.
Okay.
Which really affects the atmosphere in a room, and you can like really count it with a meter.
Oh, yeah.
That it's very different. But with the paint, it's not that much that you really can count it with a meter.
Okay.
But you can count the feeling.
Yeah. Right.
You have.
And
to be surrounded by a clay color wall. Plus, the colors are very soft and natural. We don't have like bright or strong colors because it's all natural pigments we got here in right. this country. And if we don't want to go to like Brazil and to bring in lapis lazuli powder.
Right, yeah.
Because
something
because
locally
that's not,
sourced.
That's yeah. not eco-friendly. Hmm. So that's the reason. And the structure you bring it on is not with a roll. It's with a brush and you brush it. And it's a very sensual feeling also to bring it on the wall by yourself. And you create like a painting.
Oh, wow. That's a really nice way to put it, because I would describe it that way now that I think about it. Because you, when you're applying it, it's almost like a mindful, it's like a meditative process. Yeah. It's not just rolling it on and getting it over with. It's more like, and also I like that when you apply it, you can go different directions mm-hmm. and there's no way to do it perfectly. It's just you do it how you want to do it.
Yeah, and you do it how you like it. Some
That's
people
nice.
Like it with really wild, expressive structures. That means you have to go much more expressive with
yes.
your brush and also take on more color,
yes.
for example. And if you want to have it like more like plain or and very like calm and very delicate, you brush it softer and not that much color.
And that reminds me of what you said over dinner recently. We were chatting. I really was so touched by this. I asked you about the way you think as far as, you know, do you live in the past? Do you live in the present or do you live in the future? Can you just say again what you told me? Because I really liked how you spoke about how you live.
What did I say? I don't remember.
You talked about you live in the present and why.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
I really,
totally in the present. Yeah,
yeah. I love that. And why do you feel like you are a present-minded person versus living in the past or living very much focused on the future? Because I think we're all different. I personally am more, I'm present, but I'm also big picture. So I'm always thinking about what's next. But I know other friends of mine, they're always thinking about the past
yeah,
and nostalgic.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I like to be in the present because I never was that way to plan that much in advance because I experienced that things are turning out differently and that it has an advantage to be able to react in the moment. If you feel something is right, if somebody is asking you, for example, for a collaboration and you're not totally booked out, you're like able to follow your feelings in the moment, then it's a great plus. I don't need to know at the moment where it leads to. It's just my feeling that leads me. And at the end, I sometimes find out, okay, that was the wrong direction. Next time I decide differently. But there are many examples and situations in my life that lead to a really good path. And I didn't know that before. And
yeah,
it's also a risk.
Yeah, right. But you told me when we were chatting, which was so nice, you said even though if something didn't work out, you still always feel like you learned from it.
Totally. Totally.
And so in a way, it always works out even when it doesn't.
Mm-hmm. It's,
because you,
it's good
you grew.
For something.
Yeah, you grew. Wow, great. I want to ask you a final question because I love how you live. Your partner, Dirk, is a lovely person. And I just would love to know, how do you make your house a home? When you come in at night, you turn the key, you walk in, you know, how did you make that happen? What does a home mean to you?
It's similar to like your other guests were answering the podcast show.
You can't listen to their answers.
And I totally agree. It's the personal style to bring stuff together that is only important for you. I mean, we always talk about interior and design and every decision we do together. It's my profession. I work in interior and Dirk works in fashion. So I have more information and more sources maybe, but he also has internet and he is interested in interior and architecture and style and design. And we always decide together. And so the home grows and It's a piece that is made by us together, and that means a lot.
Yeah,
if you have
evolving.
A place that it's like we don't have babies, so that's a kind of a baby.
Yeah, that's your ever-evolving art project.
Yeah,
it's always a open canvas. You can do whatever you wish.
Yeah, and yeah. I like about design and interior that it's like universal to understand. If somebody comes in and has no clue about design or lives with any design pieces because it's he or she is on a different track, you can feel if something is, if a room is right for you or not right without knowing too much. It's like looking at a picture,
yeah,
a painting in a museum, and you don't need to know too much about the painting, how it was created, on
it's just a feeling.
What
you
circumstances?
Have.
Just a yeah. feeling. Yeah.
Yeah, and it always makes me think about grandma's house.
Mm-hmm.
My grandmother had zero understanding of interior design. Didn't even care. But at the end of the day, I always think of grandma's house as being so cozy and full of love and
yeah.
great things to eat. And we watched Lawrence Welk and Johnny Carson and all of these on American television with her, and the feeling.
Yeah.
And sometimes it was so full of kitsch. Some of the stuff was like, oh my God. But at the end of the day, that's what made the house a home. That
yeah.
is just a feeling, right?
Totally.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have any reference like to your own life, someone's house like that, that it had a feeling like that with grandparents or?
Yeah. My grandparents had a nice home. And I remember like details, like for example, like boxes where the candies were stored in.
Oh, yeah. Right. Where the chocolate was. Yeah. Oh, that's so sweet. Yeah, good. Well, thank you again for being on the show. Really happy that you're here. And I'll see you at EMN.
Yeah. Thank you.
Great.
Thank you, Holly.
Thank you. Thank you for listening. If you'd like to hear more about what drives creatives behind the things we love, follow my podcast. There'll be a new podcast every 2 weeks. Please like the podcast in the Apple Podcast app so more people will find this. And I'd love if you'd share it on Instagram at Holly Magazine. I'd really appreciate it. I'd also love your feedback. Please email me at holly@holly-magazine.de. And you can write to me in English or German. I'm really excited to see what you have to say. And also, if you'd love to be a guest, email me as well. Thank you for listening again and have a nice day.
Audio Now.